even if you just focused on full feedings from birth and worked to keep around the same number of feeds every day, you're going to get a happier baby. You know, baby's going to naturally fall into their rhythm and they will sleep if you just focused on that.
From To Be Magnetic, this is the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As the leading destination for neural manifestation, we dispel the woo-woo in order to help you create real, tangible results based on neuroplasticity, psychology, epigenetics, and energetics. Our goal is to normalize the practice of manifestation and empower you to get into the driver's seat of your life in order to manifest the experiences, relationships, and things that most align with your authenticity. Part of our manifestation process entails expanding past your limiting subconscious beliefs. Therefore, by tuning into this podcast with interviews from experts, thought leaders, spiritual teachers, scientists, and those with neural manifestation success stories, you're starting the process of expanding your subconscious in order to see to believe that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, the process begins.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Expanded. Jessica here. So we have got the parenting episode for you today. Lacey is joined by Anne Marks of Full Feedings. If you haven't heard of her yet, I know you're going to check her out after this. Anne is an actress and a model. You may remember her from America's Next Top Model. But Anne went on to launch Full Feedings to really debunk the idea that when you become a parent that you have to give up sleep. Since we are such big believers in sleep here at TBM, as part of your entire wellness and self-care routine, this was really the perfect fit. And Lacey discovered Anne's program, I think from one of our other guests, Melissa Wood. And Lacey has gone on to use Anne's method in order to get the most effective sleep for her little one and for Lacey, and has found great results from it and is continually looking at tweaks and updates for Teddy's sleep schedule. And honestly, I just really love listening to Anne. She reminds me of all of my friends back in the East Coast. She's so funny and charismatic and confident, and it's really a joy to listen to her and Lacey's combo. So I'm sure you're going to have so much insight and so many tools and tips and tricks to write down from this episode. They really cover everything from how to navigate sleep with a newborn and a toddler and moving through all of those phases, the importance of full feedings in order to get them to sleep, the trifecta of sleep, wake time, and feedings in order to make sure your child has all of their needs met. And then Lacey actually goes in to share some insight into her birthing story. You hear more tips and tricks on different formulas and things that has worked for both Lacey and Anne. There's so much information in here. I'm sure you're going to want to get a pen and a paper. Send this one to all of your moms, dads, parents out there who could benefit from hearing some hacks in the sleeping, feeding, and just overall baby care department. I also want to make a quick disclaimer that we are not medically licensed physicians. So if you are making any changes to your baby or child's healthcare routine, make sure to consult your doctor, practitioner, or healthcare provider. Enjoy.
And now a word from our partners. When we first decided to take on partnerships in order to take this podcast to the next level for you, it was an absolute no-brainer to partner up with Blue Blocks. You've heard me talk about them for, I think, about a year and a half to 2 years at this point. Just like you, I first discovered them listening to a podcast And as a listener, I used the code of the podcast to buy my very first pair, which was a nighttime pair with the red lenses. And what hooked me about that specific episode is it goes so in depth, just like the two episodes we have with founder Andy Mant, into why blue light is so hormonally disrupting. It disrupts our sleep patterns, our natural circadian rhythms. And then I became a huge expert on light pollution. And I've gone on now to buy multiple of their products with my own money. The very favorite that I use every single evening, I also take it with me every place I travel so that I can use it on the airplane and I can use it for jet lag, as well as using it for DIs during the day and the evenings, is the sleep mask. Now, before this, I used many sleep masks because I was doing the DIs with them. However, once they released this product, I've never looked back. And I own three of them, again, that I've bought with my own money. I have one at the Forest House. I have one that's always packed and ready for travel. And I have one in Topanga. What's so miraculous about these is that they've developed them so that they're kind of like goggles, meaning that when they're over your eyes, they're not smashing your eyes. So they're not creating wrinkles. They're also not creating your eyelashes to smash and get into your eyes, things that I've experienced with other eye masks. So it's kind of like a goggle in the sense that you can actually open your eyes when you're wearing them and you can move your eyes around. But here's the kicker, and it's totally backed by science, they 100% block out light. So if you've been looking for an eye mask to do DIs with, to travel with, or like me, if you still are in the country and receive light pollution at night, which I do in Topanga coming in through the valley, you will want to pick these up. If anybody's ever struggled with any type of fertility or hormonal disruption like I have, you will want to listen to the two episodes linked below that I have with the founder, Andy Mant, where he goes deep into the science of how blue light disrupts our circadian rhythm, our hormones, our sleep, and our happiness. So use the code at checkout, all caps, MAGNETIC, MAGNETIC, to receive 15% off your purchase. One partnership I really want to talk about today is Juneshine. I actually have a story about this because I feel like they finally filled the market of what I desired in my mid-20s. When I was cocktailing at the Thirsty Crow on Sunset in Silver Lake, I would have the fun nights of whiskey and all the things you get into. But that's right around when I started to find my health journey. And one thing I really desired was a kombucha on tap. And I was like, wouldn't it be amazing if there was even a kombucha that got you a little more buzzed, but not totally wasted, that was on tap, that you could go and just have a happy hour or you could have in the evening and keep it mellow without cruising really hard. And then a couple of years ago, the team and I went on a little retreat up to Ojai and we went to a bar to have a drink together. And I just ordered kombucha. Unbeknownst to me, it was the very first hard kombucha I had. I didn't realize. And it gave the perfect afternoon buzz where I could just enjoy the ride. It was very clean. It didn't affect my body poorly. The next day it was okay. I wasn't very dehydrated. And I was like, this is the answer. This is what I wish I had, what, 7 years ago? And so I feel like Juneshine is the perfect partnership for our community because I think a lot of people feel the same way as I do. And what I love about their company is they totally filled the market of clean sustainability. And their whole mission was when they were walking down the aisle of, you know, grabbing a beer, it's a very surf cultured community forward brand, that there was surprisingly nothing clean. It was all very toxic. And in fact, in the alcohol industry, you don't have to exhibit on the label everything. So the toxicity ran pretty deep. And so they decided, okay, we're going to come together and we're going to create this wonderful hard kombucha that is extremely transparent in the sense that the ingredients are the old-fashioned ingredients of Jun, which is Jun and honey. And they're even more transparent to let you know that in order to get this, they ferment the Jun one time. And to make it harder, they give it a second fermentation. So it's as transparent and clean and non-toxic as possible. And they really came up with it for the golden hour after a surf or hike drink to achieve that exact perfect little edge off buzz that I talked about earlier with a wake up feeling good in the morning vibe. The sustainability piece is remarkable when I spoke to them because they donate 1% of sales. So that's not net profit, that's gross sales, which is a lot more than net profit, to 1% of the planet, which benefits environmental nonprofits through Patagonia. And in April, they become a carbon neutral brewery that's entirely powered by solar. They compost, they don't have any plastic cutlery. Like, they're really thinking from the inside out all the way to scaling, which astounds me as a company owner. It's always been our prerogative here to try to scale as less waste as possible. And we've really achieved that with a digital space. But for them to be able to scale and be carbon neutral at the degree they are, it's just profound. So it's something I have a tremendous amount of respect for. Not to mention, all ingredients are organic. So even when you're looking at organic labels, it only means that a certain percentage has to be organic. However, with Juneshine, it's all organic, every single ingredient. They have no preservatives or sweeteners outside of honey. It's gluten-free, very low sugar, as the fermentation process eats away a lot of the sugar. And it's 6% alcohol, so you really get that perfect buzz. Unlike any of their other competitors, they really do hit the market and ace every single angle, from the sustainability to the organic to being so transparent. And on top of it, they have a fantastic culture and community, which you should definitely check out online at their website. And it's the type of packaging that you would love to have at any gathering at your place because it's really chic. A couple of favorite flavors amongst the team is Blood Orange Mint, Painkiller, and Grapefruit Paloma. So if you'd like to try some Juneshine, go ahead and click on the link below, which leads to their website, and use the code, all caps, TBM for 20% off. For the listeners who are just wanting to go ahead and type it in, it's Juneshine, JuneShine.com, or you can find the link below and use all caps TBM for 20% off. All right, on to the episode. So forgive me on this because you might be able to hear my pumps, which I thought if I can pump while speaking to anybody, it's you. So if anybody else is hearing that in the background, apologies, but I'm so excited to have you here today.
I'm so excited to be here and I have PTSD from my pump, so I will.
Man, I know. In fact, this morning around 5 a.m. when I still hadn't gone back to sleep since the 3 a.m. feed, we'll get into all that. I was thinking about you because I've been following your feed for obviously a bit before I had my daughter, and I was like, twins. Part of me that I'm now 30, I'll be 37 this next year. I'm 36 right now. And we had to do IVF after 5 years of trying naturally. And there is a really bold part of me who's always wanted 4 kids. And I'm like, maybe the last I'll just put in twins. But one, I'm like, how in God's name has she done this with twins?
Honestly, the first is such a learning curve for everyone. Like, anyone who's not saying that is lying. And it's such a learning curve, especially depending on what you were doing before, but you just go from nothing to having this little baby dictate. I remember I used to be like, I do not want to get up in the middle of the night right now, physically having that thought, I don't want to get up. And with twins, it was, I had them. I always empathize with moms that have twins for their first, although they don't know any better. But with my twins, it was a little bit easier because I kind of knew everything was going to end. Mm. So it's really, I'm super organized and it's just a lot of organization. And honestly, they're better babies because they do have to wait. They learn to wait and have patience much sooner than, let's say, a singleton who, like my daughter, I blow dried her hair for 2 years. She didn't even have hair. I'd be like, we're going to luxuriate right now. Yeah. And then my twins, they barely even get lotion.
Yeah.
So I'm like, real talk.
No, I love it. I love it. Do you know your moon and rising too? We ask everyone. I'm like, let's get to the sleep.
I'm Aries, my sign, and I'm Scorpio rising and Scorpio, whatever the other one is.
The moon.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's a lot.
I go to this a medium all the time, and she's in LA, and she's like, you're like the engine of a Ferrari. I'm like, yes, I am. I am. But I'm also very sensitive. My daughter is a Sag. Love of my life. She and I are like complete soulmates, just want to like crawl inside of each other. But I looked up in the early days how to parent her because I was like, she's like a free spirit. And I'm like Aries. I'm like, we're doing it controlling and I need to feel safe. And like, what is going on?
Fast. Yeah, totally.
And now like, this is too long. I'm impatient. And it helped me tremendously to parent her because that's not the cross I'm going to die on with my child's parenting. Let her free. And it really helped.
Well, so we might as well just pop right into it. So I actually followed your method. I watched it, both my partner and I watched it before Teddy came. And it's always his joke. He's like, did you give her a full feed? It's like from watching your online program. And so we started it from day one. Like the moment we latched, it was like full feeds. And even my postpartum doula was like, I don't know if a brand new baby can eat for 30 minutes.
We're like, we're going to see.
We're going to see for sure. But we had major nursing issues, like a lot of moms go through or parents go through, with ties. And so we were late in the game. We like did the first lip tie because the latch was so painful. And we were like, we're going to watch the tongue and see. And then the tongue came around and my milk supply dropped so much that we had to do it if I wanted to keep nursing. Almost threw it out the window because it was so intense with the pumping schedule. Whatever, the day I almost quit, it came around. But ever since, my supply has been such a game. It's just like, if I stop eating as many grains, if I don't get enough sleep, if I work out too much, if I whatever, it's the first thing to go is my supply.
It's very sensitive. Yes. I think people don't talk about that enough. And I really try to be optimistic with my parents because everyone is different. But the truth is supply changes and it is affected by a lot of things. And it can be very stressful, you know, trying to maintain that. And then I think sometimes the stress of the stress causes your supply to be even worse.
Yeah.
So then it's like you're getting into this cycle that's difficult. But the pumping, you know, hyper pumping, a lot of people talk about that, is great if you really want to commit to being exclusively breastfed. There are ways that you can work with it, you know, if that's your choice. I always try to like veer to moms and just be like, well, what do you want to do? I'm never the mom that's like, you should be doing this, except when it comes to optimal wake time and other things. But
I really support where everyone's at. But with all of that said, essentially, I have always kept one night feeding to keep the supply up because my lactation consultant was like, if you really want to be exclusively breastfed, I would really do that. And I was okay with it. But, and this is something because I, you know, I watch a lot of your videos and stuff. The moment teething started to hit and weaning from her swaddle, because she rolled really early, as well as a snuggle me at night, I have literally like a running list on my phone of things I won't do with my next baby. But all of that combined, now we're in this rhythm of essentially she's in bed with us, which I haven't ever wanted to be a co-sleeper, but we are at this very moment. And she's waking up 4 times in the night to nurse. And I'm like, what a great time to talk to
you. You're like, this is perfect. Well, what typically happens is, and how I see it, now obviously things have to go into it as well. We are obviously, this is why we make sure we're working on those full feeds during the day. So then at night, we can make deliberate choices about our babies without feeling like we're compromising their needs, because that was the biggest thing for me. I never wanted to think that, what am I doing the right thing? Is baby hungry and I'm trying to withhold food? But what essentially can happen when you kind of go through some of these transitional times is that if you do go back to feeding as a comfort or feeding as just a means to get baby back to sleep, which is so common, those feeds then can in essence create the night waking. So then the baby's waking and you're like, well, the baby must be hungry. And so I'm going to feed again. And you basically just exacerbate your own problem and just perpetuate it. And it just keeps going around. So usually when you get like all is not lost, just go back and you reevaluate your day. You make sure, okay, baby's getting the same amount of feeds every single day. That's a key component because every baby is different. So whatever Teddy is eating during the day in 24 hours, that is what her baseline is going to be for her. I actually just made this thing that says we move the milk and then we move the feed. So we always want to focus, our goal with her would be, okay, we have to look and replace that food that she's eating during the nighttime in the daytime. And then we can start to make a plan on how to get rid of some of those nighttime feeds. That's how I view it. A lot of people go backwards and then try to remove the food to force sleep. And that's not how I see it being effective.
Absolutely. And you know what's so funny, because you've been in my mind, obviously, during this transition, is we have a house up north and we were just there last week. And I was like, that's it, you know, to my partner, Max, because he's the rocker at night. I'm the feeder. He's the rocker. And he's so amazing. And he takes the pumps and like puts them in the fridge, the whole thing. He's amazing. Aww. I know he's like the night doula at this point.
You're like, sorry, Max, not sure you thought you signed up for this, but you did.
I don't know. He loves it. You know, very Virgo. It's so sweet. I'm like, jackpot. So kind. So last week when we were up there, I was like, okay, she's only eating once at night. We're focusing on the full feeds during the day and you'll rock her each of the times she wakes up. And it worked perfectly. And she went back to one little feed. And then this week, her awareness out of nowhere has just really blossomed. I mean, she's always had awareness, but it's she's at that age, like almost 5 months, where she now really communicates her needs. So in the middle of the night, these last wake ups, when we pick her up and he picks her up to rock her, she's like, la, la. It's like the cry for food.
She's like, let's go.
Yes. And he's like, I think you're going to have to pee.
You're like, oh boy, we are not getting her back to sleep. Sometimes that can be though. So like one of the transitions that happens from about five to 6 months old is that the total sleep needed in the daytime changes drastically. So it goes from about 4.5 hours during the day to 3.5 hours during the day. I don't know what her date of birth is, but if you're getting closer to that 5 month mark, it's very common to see that like their sleep needs kind of drastically change from 5 months old to 6 months old. And what happens is if we're going along and we're like, oh, we're following Anne's guides and we're doing it. And then all of a sudden the baby is like waking at night. Usually it's an indication that we need to tweak the daytime somehow, either lessening daytime sleep or, you know, by increasing wake time or actually physically lessening the amount of naps. I always view sleep because I'm like, there's always something to do. And I would have to look at her specifics in the daytime to be like, this is exactly what I think that you should do as far as like, but usually I see sleep. I don't know why no one has ever approached it from a need-based standpoint, but I am. So here I am. I'm like making a whole career out of it, but I'm like, that's how I see it. They're not waking, you know, to manipulate us. And before I had my first, I was like, savage. I'm going to let her cry it out. I'm A-type. I got to do this. I got to get back to work. And then she came and I was like, oh my, I could never do that. And I really started to look into this, like the needs. And really, I find that sleep disruptions are really caused by hunger and or being overly tired or getting too much sleep. And that's how I created my method, was to really balance all of those things at each age. In addition to kind of focusing on those full daytime feeds again, you also have to make maybe some tweaks during the day of, oh, maybe she's awake too long. In her last period, I just posted about this the other day, awake too long between the end of the last nap and bedtime, a huge culprit for nighttime sleep disruptions, because there are other things that go into it that aren't just hunger or just overly tired. So, you know, it's kind of methodically working through them is how I do it, to say, okay, well, we know Teddy's fully fed during the day. Check, we're done. All right, now let's see, is she sleeping too much relative to what her baseline is? If I think she is, let's lessen that a little bit. 15 minutes like makes a world of a difference. And then maybe she's not up ready to party in the middle of the night for you, because that's really not fun. My guess is it might be like a tweak to the daytime sleep, because sometimes when they're awake and they're very alert at night, it's an indication of too much daytime sleep. So either needing to increase the optimal wake time or decrease the total nap time for the day. So definitely stuff to do always. It's not, you know, just, oh, leave your baby to cry, which I don't even understand. I'm actually reading a book right now that's kind of supporting the science behind why I'm like, oh no, please don't let your baby cry.
Yeah, agreed. Well, this is such a good place to talk to current parents, impending parents, any parents, any caretakers. Give us your background, how you even, obviously, we at this point realize that you're a mom of three, so much to dissect. Tell us how you even really became passionate about this.
I'm a mom of three. I'm actually a single mom of three. I didn't plan on that. I know a lot of moms do, but I did not. So I'm newly divorced, which is great. And I have three kids, a daughter who's going to be six, and my twins are just over three. And when I got pregnant with my daughter, I was like, I have to sleep. My mental health, you know, I've struggled with anxiety, you know, little things, nothing crazy, but I knew when I didn't sleep, I was like a nightmare. And everyone scares you. There's all these horrible scare tactics out there for parents, which I find so cruel because I'm like, don't scare them into thinking they're never going to sleep again. But I kind of bought into it. So I really set out to research. I'm very much a student. When I'm passionate about something, I will read and, you know, research. It seemed very easy to me. Like a lot of the methods kind of said the same things, but there was no method that I was like, oh, I love that. Everything was kind of like, okay, I'm going to take from this. I'm going to take from that. I'm going to use my logic and my instincts and put it all together. So when my daughter was here, I had a night nurse who was fantastic and she would literally do everything I said. Like I just knew. It was like, I honestly say it's a gift from God because I would just be like, just do this. Okay, just do this. All right, this is what we're going to do next. So after I had my daughter slept through the night at like 8 weeks old. My night nurse was like, you need to write a book. And I was like, please, please, girl, please. I don't have, you know, I was like modeling and acting. I'm like, I'm on a TV show. I am not doing infant sleep. You know, I was like all in New York and doing all this stuff. And so I kind of just like brushed it aside. But obviously, as my marriage started to kind of get a little tense, I had my twin sons, one thing leads to another. And I was like, you know, I have these perfect specimens. I have a daughter who was breastfed for a year. I have twin sons who were born 8 weeks premature, who were predominantly bottle fed from birth because they were so early and tube fed. And I had this stuff. I had my same night nurse. And I remember as my sons were born, she was like, Anne, you have to do something because you have this gift. And so instead of writing a book, I started to create this method. I was like, there has to be a way to explain this to parents because there was all these books out there that I was like, they're so complicated. How can I convey to parents what so easily happened for me? How can I make this, you know, easy for them? And I'm sure you, like, I've seen some of your programs as well, where it's like, there has to be a way to like break this down. And I made it. And I was like, you know what? I want to make this accessible to everyone. And also too, when my daughter was little, I found that creating a routine, like when I would talk to their parents, they would be like, well, I just don't know what to do. And I'm like, well, here, let me show you. And so I started consulting, like long before I ever charged anyone any money, I was consulting parents and friends through this method and then kind of just brought it all together, you know, as I started to separate from my husband and had to really provide for myself. I was like, wow, I need to make this accessible. And it was a, you know, something I love to do. It was funny because I know that your manifestation, all that stuff is like your forte. And I would always manifest and I would always leave it like open-ended because I know, you know, I'm not like getting into the like cursed house or exactly this. And it's so funny because I'm like living my dreams right now. Wow. And I'm like, it looks nothing like anything I thought. So I'm like living my best life because I get to help families sleep, which is so, so important. As I get further and further into my work and my business and just really reading science about things that I instinctively know, but finding science to really support the importance of sleep for development beyond just being like, oh, I want my kid to go to sleep so that I can sleep. So many are values that come with sleeping for the whole family. So I launched my online program right before COVID, like literally we went into lockdown. And I launched it not on purpose.
It aligned.
It aligned for me. I was like, wow, this is really great when you just follow this.
The universe was throwing you the biggest bone after the divorce.
Oh, yeah. Like my divorce. And that's the thing. I mean, I did not have the best marriage. But if I look at it, I have these like three amazing kids. And then it really created an entire business for me that I'm just like love waking up and doing. I've also had I don't know how much of my story you know, but I've had a very difficult past couple years losing both of my parents, my aunt, like basically my whole, like that generation of family has passed away.
So sorry.
But this has also really given me such a purpose to wake. I mean, it's such a gift because I wake up every day and get to help people. It gives me purpose and reason to, you know, keep going. So many things have aligned.
And it's really beautiful to watch, even though, you know, I'm new to your experience. I see it continuing to get better and more information and more developed and the branding's on point. So with that said, let's get into explaining a little bit about your method to people.
Yes, I would love to. So infant sleep, when I did my research, you know, my own experience, my experience with my clients, which I'm constantly like tweaking, right? Like every time I talk to thousands of parents, constantly tweaking this. But what I found was, you know, obviously the name of my company is Full Feedings. So important. Hungry babies do not sleep well. So focusing on that is really, really essential. And that's something that you can begin from birth, because we all start feeding from moments after we give birth, whether that's a bottle, you know, under the baby is going to be fed shortly after being born. And so why not start from then to develop these full feeds? And it's a process. You know, ever I get moms that are like, my baby's not going to eat for 30 minutes. And I'm like, that's not going to happen probably the first day. Some babies do, but really just focusing on meeting the food needs. That's the first thing that I'm like, we have to just start from birth to focus on that. And really that's all I do in the first month is work to establish those full feedings, because it's, I think it's such an important ingredient to get baby to consistently sleep. And then that changes, you know, over the course of a year, or if you're going beyond, you know, beyond a year, the milk is not quite as important for the sleep. But in the beginning, the milk is, you know, their only sustenance to keep them full. So it's, you have to basically maintain those full feedings over the course of the first year to make sure at every age, as baby grows, that they're going to remain fully fed. You know, there's guidelines in my program of bottle feeding, breastfeeding, or if you're combination feeding. And again, like you had shared with tongue tie, there are tons of problematic eaters. You know, I never wish that on anyone. My kids had reflux horribly, like threw up everything they ate for a year, still slept. You know, it's challenging though. It's, you have to get creative. And if you want to exclusively nurse, it's definitely possible to get your baby to consistently sleep and get them fully fed. If they have trouble, you know, in one sitting, we find kind of creative ways to work on those full feeds and keep them fully fed. So sometimes it's eat, play, eat, sleep, where you're doing double feeds, which, you know, not every, my goal is like the least amount of work for the most amount of feeding. Because I am a mom, I understand the work that goes into it. You know, I try to make it as minimal as possible for parents. But there's definitely ways to work with exclusively breastfeeding moms to establish those full feedings. The only reason I always get asked, like, is bottle feeding or is formula, you know, help babies to sleep longer? And the truth is that the statistics on formula fed babies and breastfed babies are nearly the same. The only difference being with formula, we know exactly what they're eating. So I think perhaps people get a little, they're like, oh, well, maybe I should give formula and that's going to help. The statistics are really the same. It just gives you that advantage because we know exactly what they're eating. But that's why we use time with breastfeeding. That's really our only indication of, you know, is baby fully fed? And again, it's relative to babies. So, you know, that's the first thing, is that's that need, the full feeds, meeting that need is so important for consistent nighttime sleep. And then from there, I look at infant sleep and say, okay, well, one thing I never understood is why people were not looking at how much baby could sleep in a day. So like you and I can only probably sleep like 8 to 10 hours. They can only sleep so much in a 24-hour period. And no one, I didn't find anyone that was really highlighting that. So I kind of work backwards because I'm like, okay, well, if we want 12 hours at night, well, I want 12 hours at night. Most parents do. What does the daytime need to look like? You know, and there are some things, you know, optimal wake time is the amount of time that your baby should stay awake, not necessarily how long they could stay awake. So often they can stay awake longer. I am so conservative in my wake windows, but I find them to be much more effective than some of the other methods out there. Other, you know, sources are like, do a longer wake window. Mine are very conservative because overly tired babies are like exorcist children. So when you are keeping your baby awake too long, it creates so many issues. I find that, you know, my wake windows are very conservative, but they are also very effective. So paying attention to how much baby should sleep in 24 hours, paying attention to what I believe age-appropriate optimal wake times are, we are able to create a routine that they should follow. And I've done that. I've created these routines that kind of show okay, well, how much should baby be napping at this age in order for 12 hours of sleep to be possible at night? How do we break those naps down? You know, these are all important things. If baby takes a 3-hour nap in the morning, they're not taking the other 3 naps they need for the day. It's just not happening because they just exceed more than half of what they need. And then they're like, I'm not tired. And then it affects the nighttime sleep. So I have found that creating this kind of perfect balance of a routine is then what gets you the consistent nighttime sleep, because we're making sure baby's fully fed. We're making sure they're never overly tired in any period. We're making sure they don't sleep too long in any period. And then, you know, there's other things that I pay attention to, you know, 12 hours of daytime for 12 hours of nighttime. You know, there's all these things that go into it. But then when you consistently do this at each age, you know, and you increase incrementally, baby will consistently sleep through the night. And you don't see these like massive sleep. Everyone's like, oh, sleep regressions. There are periods of time that there are regressions. I don't like to like ghost parents on that. I'm like, I'm not leaving you out there in the woods, but there are periods of time where you see these little regressions, but there's usually something to do. There's usually like, okay, well, let's try lessening the daytime sleep. I just firmly believe that when you meet baby's food and sleep needs fully, they naturally sleep through the night. I mean, it's not jumping. Baby's not going from sleeping 4 hours at night to 12 hours at night. That's not happening. But we incrementally work from birth, and it's very easy to get baby to sleep through the night with a dream feed at 8 to 12 weeks old. And I see it over and over and over again. It doesn't mean every baby's going to do it. I'm sure that there are issues and feeding and things that we have to troubleshoot, it can take a little bit longer. But I find there's no reason to do traditional cry it out or extinction or any of those kind of more harsher sleep training methods. I think parents kind of get to those at the end of their rope. And there's no reason that any parent should be not working on sleep from birth, because it's not, I don't consider what I do to be sleep training. But we will get your baby to, like, we will, are in theory training your baby to sleep, but we're doing so by meeting their needs fully, which is why it's so gentle and can begin from birth. Like, I'm working really hard. I want this to become the standard. The baby comes out and we're all doing this from birth, you know, working towards this.
Well, I can attest to it's worth it so far. And again, like, I almost threw in the towel a few times, and I support where everyone's at because I can see the whole gambit at this point. And as an Aquarius, I've been like, man, if Max could just hand her a bottle for the day. I love alone time, and I haven't been fully alone at all since having her. And there was a friend of mine I was talking to recently where at 9 months, she was like, I was done. He was done. And it was so nice to go to the spa for the day and just know that his dad could just fully take care of him. And I totally understand it. So just sending a lot of compassion.
Yeah, no, it's important too. My son's kind of along those same lines. You know, my sons were 8 weeks premature. They were tube fed breast milk from birth, and I was making so much milk, but they were never regulating it on my breasts. And I got mastitis so many times. And I was not, obviously, my marriage was failing. I had a toddler at home. My mom was dying at the time. And I was like, I just can't do this all. Like, and I just made the decision to switch to exclusively formula at 3 months old because I just couldn't do it. I was like, I'm going to literally go crazy. My mom's dying. I'm going through like this tough time with my ex-husband. My daughter needs my attention. She's 2.5. And I just can't sit in the kitchen and pump and then bottle feed twins, pumped breast milk. They never latched on. And it was, you know, it was the best decision I ever made in that moment. No kid goes to kindergarten being like, well, how long did your mom nurse you for? No. Did your mom nurse you? No one's, you know, asking that. And it really, I think we have to just make the best decision, even if it's not consistent from child to child. We have to just make the best decision in the moment to take care of ourselves too, because we're the ones that have to get up every day and do this.
100%.
Yeah. So I'm a big, big advocate. I never suggest to moms, oh, maybe some formula. I don't do that. But like, I'm very much pro, like, well, what do you want to do? And how can we like take care of you too? I think it's very important.
Yeah. And I loved, you know, my postpartum doula always made the joke, and she was the one, because I had to actually supplement during the supply dip when we were figuring out the tongue tie, which for anybody out there, I was trying to do a deep dive. I'm like, what's the best formula I can give, you know, Teddy at this time? And we almost started making it, but it's Holly. Is that what you suggest to people?
I use Holly too. Yeah. So I use Holly with my daughter, but there are some other, I've heard decent things about Bobbi. I didn't have any personal experience. It's a new formula. I guess it's supposed to be cleaner. You know, Holly was good. I used my sons. I used Gerber, which I never thought I would, but they had really bad reflux. I used Gerber Good Start Soothe, which, you know, my best friend used it. And my sons were, by the time they were one, were eating 45 ounces of formula each a day. They were pigs. They're huge.
Wow.
And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to be broke on Holly. Like, I'm sorry, boys. But like, it was like, they would eat one box a day. I swear. I was like, they weren't that big. I was like, mommy loves y'all, but.
Yeah. No, it's crazy too, trying to get the Holly because it, like my postpartum doula, it was like a drug deal. She was like some guy in Manhattan Beach. He's an Australian dad. He keeps a warehouse of it.
You're like on the DL. I got the hookup.
Yeah, the hookup.
It's hard. It's. Yeah, it was difficult. I know that people had some issues getting it from different places online, but you know, I hate to say it. It's so cliche to be like, fed is best, but like it really is. But obviously everyone's doing their best for their baby and babies, I think it's Babies Only, it's called, was a good one as well. But there are good options out there and you just, you know, you do your best.
100%. I think for me, it's made me more sensitive. But the other thing, you know, and I just want to say this, that my postpartum doula and I would joke about, I was cesarean and not breastfed ever. I was on formula, like straight up Similac was how I was raised. And so was she. And she's like, we turned out great. So, you know, like, don't worry.
Yeah, you guys are doing a fantastic, look at you. You're killing it. You have like all this success. You're running a business and you have a baby and you're doing it. I know. It's hard though. There's pressures, I think, for parents. Everyone wants to just give their kid the best. And
yep, 100%. And I just also want to make the disclaimer, because I know you have to do it all the time on your channel. It's like, we are both giving the benefit of the doubt to this community of who's listening, that everyone is empowered and intelligent enough to make the best decisions for their kids. Because the moment you get into talking about like, quote unquote, sleep training, everyone starts to freak out.
People get freak.
Yes.
I'm going to do a TED talk. I want people to understand that it's not bad. And the other thing I really am passionate about is like, I could argue that sleep is actually more important for our bodies. We can go longer without food than we can without sleep. So why is there this stigma surrounding talking about baby sleep from birth? We should be absolutely focused on that from when we are very, very little. And I want to change that misconception around sleep, because people, they're like, well, do I have to wait? I'm like, no, you don't have to. Why would you wait? You want to start now. Let's develop these good habits now of meeting your baby's needs fully. Full Feedings is trying to change that misconception around infant sleep that we aren't having. We aren't triggered about like, oh, I'm labeling you what kind of a mom you are because you want your child to sleep. You should want your child to sleep. And this is not unrealistic sleep. It's not like I'm telling you that to do anything harmful to your baby. The baby's needs come first always. Like I consistently tell parents, like if you are ever in question in the middle of the night about what to do, feed your child, hold your child. Like we're never going to take a risk that baby's needs aren't met. And then you just try, you reevaluate the next day. But we have to try to change this narrative because there are so many parents that are out there operating in the world without sleep. Going back to work, they're trying to drive cars. I mean, there were times I would drive my car in the first 8 weeks when my daughter was born that I was like, I don't actually remember just driving from like where I was to where I was going. And that's scary. We want people to be rested, not only for the sleep, but be upstanding members of our society, contribute in their own ways, get back to work and impact the world in the way that they're impacting the world. And then from that too, I think from a development standpoint, the sleep is so important to baby's development. I get so many moms that are like, well, when's playtime? And I'm like, well, sleep is very important for development as well. And so is playtime, but we really want to be working on that. And it's so easy. That's what I want parents to kind of understand as well. Even if you just focused on full feedings from birth and worked to keep around the same number of feeds every day, you're going to get a happier baby. You know, baby's going to naturally fall into their rhythm and they will sleep if you just focused on that. So working hard over here. I'm a one-woman show. trying to hire someone. Does anyone, I need someone to help.
Yeah, here you go. If anyone's looking for a job that's passionate about full feedings, reach out to Anne.
Well, that's probably, you probably can understand that because I don't want to compromise. I don't want to compromise what I'm giving to parents, even though I charge $9.99 a month. I don't want to compromise. Because most people live on a budget. Most people can't afford to privately work with me. So I wanted to make something where this is like every person can get sleep. Most people could afford. My base program is $29.98. That's it.
Amazing. And it's so accessible.
That's the minimum that you would pay me to have access to all the information that I provide. And it's like, you know, I want to make that possible for everyone.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest to begin, we have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child, and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode.
Yeah, that's always been our goal here too, is to make this work as accessible as possible. And you're doing such a great job at it. And I can really attest to it. I read Babywise, I read a couple of other things. And then of course your model, and what I like about your model is it's so practical. You even, and I'll attest to this, we had a night doula who helped us and she had the easiest job in the world. Teddy from almost day one was sleeping incredibly long stretches because we were so focused on the full feeds. Even by, I want to say 10 weeks, she was able to do like almost 7-hour stretches. And so it was really sweet. Our night doula came to basically just sleep next to her.
You're like, really thank great. You for watching yeah. my child.
And everyone was like, how is she doing this? You know, because they're only familiar with these more rigorous sleep training methods. And what I love about yours too, is that you're all about like, I don't care how the baby sleeps, how you get the baby to sleep. The focus is to really stay within the lanes of full feeds, making sure the awake times are correct, you know, going to sleep on time, and, you know, essentially playtime is all solid. You're going to get good results. And what was so approachable as a new first time mom in the very beginning, I was like, everything's overwhelming. And how am I going to know if I'm doing the awake times right or playtimes? What is a playtime with a newborn? You know, it's just like whatever. And I loved your step one is literally just focus on full feeds. And we did starting at, you know, I finally transferred to the hospital after 7 centimeters. I was like, give me an epidural, I'm out of here.
Not I don't for know. Me. How long did you labor without?
Well, I was really, really, I'm going to say privileged on this because I've heard so many stories, but I do like to share this because when I was going through and trying to find what we call expanders, so expansive, positive birth stories, is actually really challenging to find ones that were quick for a first time birth, that were harmonious and just straightforward. And I was really keeping my mind so strong on that, practicing a lot of mind over matter. And I got to a point where it clicked in probably, I'd say, a week before birth that I was like, oh, this is going to be quick, harmonious, and straightforward. Like the belief was so expanded in there, it finally locked in. And it was the experience I had. My doctor did the membrane sweep, and literally, I probably would have had her unmedicated within 12 hours, but I chose at 7. And at that point, I had been laboring. I think it was, so that was at 3 a.m. and I started at 6 p.m., but didn't go into active labor until 10 p.m. So from 10 p.m. to 3 a.m., I got to 7 and I was like, look, I can do this. I do want Max. We were actually in a hotel room, like right over by Cedars, because I felt like Topanga, where we live, is just, it was a little hairy for a first birth. I didn't want to like transfer at 7, you know. Let me tell you, that 3-block drive alone was very long.
My daughter was the same. I was like, when you decide, you're like, that's a long, I'm waiting for this epidural to come. It's a long time.
Can't come fast enough. Exactly. But yeah, so yeah, that 7 hit, and boy, I was on all fours in the back of my car. It was so cute. I asked my doula, my birth doula, I was like, so do I call an ambulance? Like, what are
we gonna do? How are we getting there?
How are we getting there as soon as possible? And she's like, no, girl, we're driving. And then you walk up through labor and delivery.
You're like, I'm not walking anywhere.
I know. I'm like holding on to the walls and contractions. And I'm like, how soon is the epidural going to take? You know, I hit that point. And once, yeah, like you're saying, you decide, it's like, you don't want to wait any longer. But long story short, right after birth, literally the moment she latched on, I was like, full feeds, full feeds, full feeds. It was the only thing I had to focus on. It made it so simple and easy. And oddly enough, not to jump around too much, but Teddy never took to dream feeds ever. She's never done them. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, some other, I have another client that, and I have a lot of clients that don't, and it's not that it's a necessity. It can help if it helps, but if it doesn't, then obviously we're not putting in extra work. And so some babies don't, you know, and that's the beauty too of my method that I'm also trying to get parents to understand is like, this is flexible. I read Babywise too, and I liked a lot of their principles. I thought it was way too rigid. I wasn't going to, if my baby woke up at 6 o'clock, I wasn't going to leave her till 7, hell or high water. I wasn't doing it. Like if my baby woke up at 6 and it was within this time frame, I'm feeding. I'm reading Oprah's book right now, What Happened to You? And I don't know if you've heard of it.
No. I'm under a rock over here.
Oh yeah. Well, that's going to happen. I'm 5 years, like 6 years out. I'm like, oh, there's like life in the world.
Yeah.
Like,
there are books. Yeah.
Yeah. There's, oh my God, there's this show. Everyone's like, did you see Sex Life? I'm like, no, I haven't seen anything.
Nothing.
I haven't seen a damn thing in 5 years, 6 years. But there's this book, it's on trauma. I came to the book based on like wanting to heal my own traumas in my own life. But there's so much information in there about these micro traumas, and they start from birth. And like, I found things like Babywise now that I can kind of put science to, where I'm like, yeah, that seems like if my baby wakes at 6 and is losing their shit, that like something's actually like we're missing a need. And if I ignore that, now I'm reading this book going, that could create a micro trauma. Like that could actually be a traumatic experience for a child, you know, not 5 minutes, not 10 minutes. You know, I'm not against, like, I don't do cry it out or anything like that. I'm not against crying. So I don't want to alienate parents that are like, ooh, I did that, because they don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. But doing that, you want to make sure that your baby's needs are met, because if you're missing that part and there's actually a need there, why they're, you know, fussing or crying, we would want to do something to help them. And the same way, it's why I believe in rocking and helping them, because I just think that from this stage, like, you don't want this rigidity. And I found Babywise to be very rigid. It was either too flexible, the things I was reading, or it was too rigid, neither of which worked for me. And I wanted to create something that was like, here's a routine. It's never going to look like this every day. It's going to look different every single day. But let me create routines for parents that we're working towards, that give you a kind of like an outline. And then we give you the tools and the ingredients to, you know, manage that when baby wakes up early, when baby, you know, how do I deal with that? Because it's common things that come up with every single parent. So, but it is, it's so beautiful to be able to start from birth. And to be honest, it's the best time to start, because they'll do anything in the beginning. Like they are so malleable with ease.
No, I love what you're saying, though. And I felt the exact same way when I would kind of investigate other methods. And I actually read something and it resonated with me. And like you said, I really support where every parent is at. And I think it's so important to honor like people who do gentle sleep training or whatever, like whatever works for you and your children. It's just, I really support you. I know for me, I read this one thing and I have so much research at this point on inner child healing and traumas and shadow work and everything, you know, it's like the basis of our work that it's always going through my mind. And so this one Instagram came up and it was like, cry it out. What is it? It is you, you know, your baby's asking for you. And so for me, that never felt comfortable up until this point, certainly, and it still doesn't feel comfortable to me, just knowing about things like microtraumas. So that's what's made your approach actually very, very realistic for us. Because like you're saying, it's not a totally loose structure, but it's loose. And it gives a lot of gray area for you to plug in what works for your family. So for instance, like in BabyWise, there's very, very specific ways to get your child to sleep and how they should sleep and all of that. And at this point, Teddy's being carried, like it's community carrying. It's the biggest joke of all time because I was like, yeah, I don't think like attachment parenting's for me. She's like co-sleeping, carried for every nap. And it's like, I think that's for Teddy. Like she's really chosen.
Yeah, but then when you're ready, like you'll see her transition like beautifully.
Totally.
People are like, oh, what am I going to do? I'm rocking my kid to sleep. And I'm like, listen, first of all, it goes by in a flash and you're going to wish my daughter is going to be sick. She's in kindergarten and she still does hold on to me because she loves me. But I wish she needed me more. I miss that time. And everyone tells you that. And when you're in it, you're like, shut up, STFU. Like it's awful because you're tired. But you'll miss it. And B, I think it's the best thing that you can do for them to really make them feel secure. And C, there's going to come a time when I swear to God, I have so many clients that are like, all of a sudden, baby just didn't want me to rock her anymore. She just wanted to go in her crib. And I was like, yeah, it's a pretty beautiful thing. And if baby doesn't do that, then there are gentle ways that you can allow opportunity for them to fall asleep when they're not overly tired. Common problem, overly tired. It causes more sleep issues. And when you have a baby that is fully fed, not overly tired, you can just put them in their crib 20 minutes before their wake time, optimal wake time, and give them the opportunity to fall asleep. And if you methodically work at that one time a day, they will learn to put themselves to sleep without crying. It's beautiful. You know, and so it's like kind of just following common sense, natural rhythms, you know, just being like, okay, yeah, because when I see kids in Target during nap time that are losing their shit on their parents, I want to go to the parents and be like, please. And then they're disciplining their child. It's like, we can't be depriving them of sleep and then punishing them through, you know, because their behavior, I don't see children as like, yes, there are behavioral issues, but when you work to kind of make sure their needs are fully met, the behavioral issues are minimal. They're less. They're like the minimum that they could possibly be. I'm not saying there's not going to be tantrums because there are, but they're minimal and they resolve themselves and they can cope and they can learn and they can transition through their life. It's far beyond just, you know, the sleep, although that's lovely as well. You know, and with you, like with your nursing, like I don't know what time Teddy's nursing, but you can maximize, like you could try to play around with, okay, well, what stretch do you want of sleep? Do you want bedtime to 3 a.m.? Is that might be good enough for you to feed her?
Yeah, that's the dream. And she goes to sleep 7:30 to 8 usually, depending on. So her big thing, I can kind of remedy usually what's going on with her based on what I know of your program. I can usually be like, oh, well, that was too long of a stretch at the end. Because you give so many tips on Instagram, which I really implore people to check out if this is inspiring you. I mean, there was even a point where we would put her down around 12 weeks and she would wake right back up not long after. And it was like, well, her stretch was way too long. And you have, I think, I can't remember if it was just a post on that. And I was like, oh, that's what's happening. So it's really informative. And at this point, the hardest nap to get her down for is her last nap, that 30-minute cat nap. She'll never do it with me being carried. I don't know if it's the
milk. How long are her first, what you'd want to look at? Sorry to interrupt you. Is her first, even if you're like, oh, the other naps are like not full 1 hour and a half naps, but if you find that a baby is fighting their last nap mm-hmm. and they still need to take it, like ideally, I would love to keep that last nap. It's the fourth one, correct?
Yep, exactly.
I would love to keep that till she's 6 months old. So in order to do that, you might have to shorten nap two or three. Usually shortening nap three will help to ensure that the fourth nap happens a little bit easier for you. And then it goes into that, what I said earlier, which is like between 5 and 6 months, she's going to go from needing 4.5 hours of daytime sleep to 3.5 hours of daytime sleep. And that's a big jump. So she might just be lessening her daytime sleep needs right now. And so then if she's getting, let's say she's getting the 4.5 hours in the first three naps, we need to maybe lessen nap three to an hour, and then that will help make nap four a little bit easier. So it's all like a managing of those things. And of course, it's relative to the baby. That's why I'm constantly like, all my parents are like, I don't want to send you notes ever again. Eventually, I'm going to create an app that it coincides with my program.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's on my massive to-do list.
Yeah.
Because it helps me to see at the given age, okay, well, baby's this age now. All right, this is what I would do. I would just shorten the nap, third nap. And I can get very, I'm very good. So I can like generally give, be like, okay, Lacey, try to lessen nap two and three and see if that helps make nap four easier just for this month while you work to drop this fourth nap, because that's going to happen.
Well, let me give you the really quick outline and see what
pick
up on.
Yeah, please. Oh my God, I'm getting my little pen here. Let's do it.
I'll give you the quick and then we'll see you probably fix everything in 2 seconds. So basically where we're at right now is that she'll go to sleep around 7 to 8 based on whatever her last nap situation was. With that, she was waking up only once in the night, which was so dreamy to keep the milk supply up. And that was usually anywhere from 12 to 3 based on when she went to sleep. And then she would sleep naturally until about 6. And I would nurse her to 7 because I just selfishly wanted to get things done. Sometimes I was getting really wily and I'd nurse her to 8 because I was like, I can take a shower and do all these things.
Right.
But right now she's sleeping till about 7 a.m. And then she's actually kind of crazy where she'll only nap at most for her naps. And I'm sticking with the 90 minutes seems to be like a good time. It's when she's yawning. It seems like to me ish, but we'll see what you say. And then she'll only sleep from anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and 15 tops for naps.
Okay. So already what's happening? I don't know exactly her date of birth.
She's almost 21 weeks.
Okay. So 20. So at 21 and a half is when I increase the 100 to like 100 minutes optimal wake time. So part of what happens is in my guides are like, it's an outline, but the cues we look for, like naps are a little bit more difficult. Naps are a little bit shorter. All of a sudden you're like, why is every single nap only 30 minutes? Like, this is weird. That's your sign that we have to change something. And so then I go and I look at the age and I say, okay, she's 21 weeks old. So at that point, then you have to gently, we never force anything, you gently try to extend her optimal wake time because that's how we're then again controlling her daytime sleep.
Oh, she's a party animal. She'll go for it. But for most babies,
okay.
Yeah.
So then you want to gently extend her to 100 minutes. So 90 minutes is great. And what you can do is this, like, say you were starting at 85 minutes or 80 minutes to get her to sleep. Like you started noticing you're like, oh, or she's falling asleep at 90. You're just going to start 5 minutes later. You gently just try to get her to 100 minutes, which is what is age appropriate. And then you might see everything becomes easier. So that would probably be the first place to start. Let's increase every wake window to 100 minutes. If her first wake window, she wants to do 90, that's common that they stay awake shorter in that first one, which is odd because I'm like, you were just sleeping all night, but very weird, but they're all like that. And then from there, the 100 minutes, you know, we would see what the naps situation would be, but she's kind of giving you a gift. And sometimes we have to tune in with the babies as well. And I tune in with them because parents are like, I'm too tired to understand what's going on. But sometimes they give us that gift. Like I said, she's going to go this month from 21 and a half weeks to 26 weeks old. She will go from the 4.5 hours of daytime sleep to needing only 3.5. She's going to probably naturally start to do that for you. We know she needs 4 naps based on her wake windows, because if she stays awake too much longer in that last period, she'll start to really have disrupted nighttime sleep, which could have been happening as you were having those wakings during the night. It could have kind of started a little bit early. And then she's up and then you're feeding her and then you're causing the wakes. And then everyone's like, everything's a mess. And I'm like, it's not. We're just going to work very slowly. And I would say for you, 100 minutes and then maybe let the naps be what they are.
Yeah. And let them see.
And let them see. Keep, but with the goal this month for your naps to be that we still want those 4 naps.
Right. Right.
And then maybe we let them be what they are. And we see how it goes and you track a couple days and then you can send it to me and then I'll say, oh, okay. I see the pattern of like, you know what? She had a better night because daytime today dictates what happens tonight. It is that sensitive and it's not meaning like there are cumulative effects as well. After a couple days, sometimes it can take a few days to elicit results. But if we let her sleep too long today, she will be up tonight. Like that's how it works with babies. So...
yeah. And explain. So for instance, just so people start to understand your process. So how Teddy's now waking up 3 times in the night to eat. She's not wanting to party. She just wants to eat, which also I think I'm needing to give her a little bit of fuller feeds because she started eating solids not long ago.
Oh, well, I could talk about that all day, girl.
Yeah, we have so much to cover on this. I hope people are tuning in. So number one piece, you know, talking about how if she's having too short of awake times, how that's going to affect the night. And then we'll move into solids after that.
Okay, so if wake time is too short, it causes too much daytime sleep because they're just not awake enough. And then what happens is, like I have always said, we control the amount of daytime sleep using optimal wake time and nap length. So we're like on this sliding scale that basically as optimal wake time increases each month, the nap time kind of decreases. And that's how we maintain their perfect optimal amount of wake time during the day, which enables 12 hours of sleep at night to be possible. If they go to bed too early, they will be in theory getting too much daytime sleep. It probably will also cause a short nap. So it kind of creates other problems as well, but it will create too much daytime sleep because they won't be awake long enough. They probably would go to sleep, but this is something I see. This is where I literally, my gift from God, because I'm like, these guides, I like surprise myself sometimes when I get parents that I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so spot on that you, I mean, it's sometimes it's like to the 2 days before the date it says that I'm like, we just have to increase a little bit the wake time. So it'll cause too much daytime sleep is my best answer. That's the first thing. And then what happens is if they sleep too much during the day, they then start to wake at night because I guess you could use the word sleep drive there. They just don't have the sleep drive to sleep that 12 consistent hours at night. And they start to have this like fragmented sleep. And if you have too much daytime sleep and baby is waking at night, like this goes for my toddler, my one twin Tommy. If Tommy wakes up at night, like I'm screwed. Like I'm up for an hour because he just won't go back to sleep. He's 3. I never fed him ever at night beyond 11 weeks old because he's my big guy. And he was like, I'm like, dude, you're getting enough food. But if he gets too much daytime sleep, even now, this goes into toddler years. So like he's 3, my twins nap for an hour and a half still and go to bed at 6:30. And they wake up usually around 7. Sometimes I don't get them till 7:30 because they just talk to each other. It's like a dream boat. They do. It's so cute.
It's such a twin thing too.
Oh, it's so cute. I like listening. I'm like, what are they saying? They call each other like Tom and Ted. It's hilarious. I'm so like, sweet. These boys. But if one of my twins, like sometimes I'm like, it's an hour and 15, wake them. And if they sleep too long during the day, sometimes they will get up at night. And then it's very difficult to get them back to sleep. This is what the same concept for infants. And then what happens is when babies are up in the night and they're not going back to sleep because they got too much daytime sleep, parents feed because they're like, I've had it. And I know that if I feed you warm milk, whether it's from my breast or a bottle, you're going to probably go back to sleep. And then what happens is then that can create a waking, in my opinion.
Because their bellies get used to it.
Yeah, they just get used to it. Or like, who's not waking up for mom? Like mom's warm milk, like, of course. And it kind of can create a wake. So that is how I see the short wake windows can also, now shorter is better than longer. So like if you're doing anything, always leave enough time so that at least if baby falls asleep early and doesn't take a full nap, they're still going to be happy.
Well, and I think people are getting the point here. So there's three components always that have to be like perfectly balanced, and they're constantly changing. And it's the feeds, it's the sleep, it's the awake time. And that's what makes this program so approachable. And then it kind of leaves, you have so many tips in between on your social media. And then I think you've been adding into the program. I haven't popped in since the very beginning because I'm like, I got this. And now I'm like, fuck, I need to learn more. Something's happening. The 4-month regression was real because Teddy is an Aries. So because she's an Aries, she loves food early on, was always grabbing for my food, is so curious and wants to eat. And I was like, I feel like solids are going to take the pressure off of all the milk, you know, trauma we've been through at this point. So we started her at literally at 4 months, and she loves it, like can't get enough, loves to eat. And how does that affect, in your opinion, this model when you, because we're up to like 3 a day right now, and she's doing berries and spinach or whatever that we've, you know, I have someone who supports us in cooking who's been making her food for her, and she loves it. She eats a lot of it, but she still obviously nurses all throughout the day. But what, how does that affect this all?
Okay, so I have this thing I created called the sweet potato example. And I actually just broke down. I like want to hand it to every pediatrician out there that's like, give your baby solids, they'll sleep longer. And I'm like, okay, well, let's just break that down for a second. Breast milk's like 18 to 20 calories an ounce. And so is formula. Formula is like 20 calories an ounce, unless you fortify and then it's more. So I broke down. I was like, all right, well, let's say baby was able to take a 6-ounce feed of breast milk or formula. That's 120 calories, 20 calories per ounce if we take that. So that's 120 calories. Let's say at the same time, if you just gave your baby solids, they were able to eat, I use a quarter of a sweet potato because that's a lot if you puree it. A quarter of a sweet potato is like 26 calories, okay? So if you just look at that, from that standpoint, it's kind of like a smoothie example. When you drink a smoothie with all these greens and calories and like all these nutrients, that's why we put it in a smoothie, because you could never eat ever. If you laid it all out on a table, you could never eat it, you know, in one sitting. It's kind of the same with kids. So it's like 120 calories is going to fill and satiate Teddy much better than 26 calories of like, let's say a starch or a fruit. And not only that, it, you know, because it fills their belly, right? So like it's filling, it's a solid food and it's in there. So when we start to introduce solids, what sometimes can happen is that it compromises baby's ability to remain fully fed on the milk. And the milk is really what's giving them the calories that they need that's perfectly balanced. Like certainly breast milk and then formula is made to emulate breast milk to perfectly give them their caloric value that they need, the nutrients that they need. Whereas solids are just sometimes, I don't want to call them empty calories. They're not. But I view solids in the first year as a way to rule out allergies and actually practice chewing, which is very important. They need to practice. Their mandible actually has to like practice how to do that. I see it disrupt sleep all the time.
Yeah. And I can totally attest to that, because literally when we started, I'm like, is she as full as she used to be? Because I see it messing with sleep a little bit.
Yeah, so it does. And so like there are ways around it. Like obviously the goal is to get baby on solids by a year. And then that's the primary source of nutrition. The truth of it is that a lot of babies still really need milk at a year. Like that's how my experience is. Not a pediatrician, just a mom. In my experience, most babies are still needing milk as a primary source of nutrition because they just can't eat enough calories and hold enough that they remain satiated and full, that they then sleep. And I use sleep as kind of an indicator of that. People are always like, baby's growing well and the weight's good. But I'm like, if they're up all night, the sleep deprivation can't be good for them either. So when I start with solids, I start in the morning. I did start with my own daughter at 4 months. You can really start whenever you want, as long as you don't see, you can see milk intake be compromised a little bit, but as if it starts disrupting the sleep, that's when you want to use that as your indicator of like, okay, maybe I need to pull back a little bit, reestablish full milk feeds, and then go back to the solids. I tell parents to do that all the time, which, you know, I don't know what a pediatrician would think about that, but from a logical standpoint, we want to stay full on that milk. And so if the sleep becomes disrupted, perhaps baby is eating too many solids. And then what happens is, even if their milk intake remains the same, like say Teddy's eating exactly the same amount of milk, and you're like, Anne, I've been feeding her for 15 minutes a time, six times a day, and that was enough. And now I started solids and her sleep is disrupted. Well, sometimes the solids can prevent her from increasing to maintain those full feedings, like I talked about in the beginning. It can prevent her from increasing the caloric need as needed to remain full, because the solids are there filling, and then she's like eating the same amount of milk and not increasing the milk intake as she gets older, which with when you're breastfeeding, it's a little bit hard to kind of quantify because she does this naturally, but that's really the theory behind it. So usually when we start with solids, when I do, it's from the morning feeds. I do breakfast, then I do lunch, then I do dinner kind of over the course of time, because if you start with breakfast, it gives her the opportunity to then remain fully fed on milk for the rest of the day. It's not giving her solids like right before dinner, where then she's not drinking the milk that she needs to sleep through the night. And that's really how I see it. So I start with breakfast, and then I move to lunch, then I move to dinner. I always offer milk first, solid seconds.
That's what I've been doing.
Yeah. And that's going to remain until closer to like 11 months when you start to game plan, okay, I'm getting off of the milk as the primary source of nutrition. But you could try to see if she will eat a little bit longer, or like, I don't know, if you're like maybe the afternoon or evening feeds, you could take out. Because what I used to do with my twins, I'd be like weaning them down, and then I would be like, all right, after their second nap, I'm switching that bottle to solids because I'm tired of doing bottles. And then they would start waking early in the morning, and then I'd be like, nope, they're not ready. So I'll go back to a bottle and I'll wait a week and then I'll try again. I always tell parents to police themselves. Our goal, yeah, we're always working forward to like solids and progressing and development and these wonderful things. But if they're not ready, they're not ready. And then you just wait a week and try again. You know, you just stay positive on that and kind of keep working towards it.
And so the whole theory, like I've always heard, I'm like, in certain cultures, they put the rice in the milk of the bottle at the night to make them sleep longer. We tried to put oats in a bottle. And that was a waste of 2 ounces of milk. I was like, no. She was like, uh-uh.
Yeah, I kind of think it's a flawed, outdated way of looking at things. And I'm really wanting to revolutionize this. And I've had people be like, well, you're just a mom. You're not a doctor. I'm like, it's common sense. And the oats, or I put rice in. One of my twins was like, needed to fortify his milk. So I had to fortify one, not fortify the other. Fortifying him with, I think it was, maybe I was using formula in the beginning to make it more calories per ounce. And then they were like, give him rice in it as well. And that was more from a reflux standpoint, not to get him, you know, more calories. But I tell parents all the time, I'm like, print out my sweet potato example from my online program and literally hand it to your pediatrician and stand there.
Yeah.
And let them read it. Yeah. I have found in my experience, you know, I had a doula who, thank God, and I had wonderful moms around me, but they don't say anything. You get all this like varying advice. And I see my parents getting, they'll be like, my doctor told me not to feed my baby more than 2 ounces and feed them every hour. And I'm like, just double check, because that doesn't sound sustainable as a human. And I'm not every pediatrician, I'm sure there's fantastic ones out there. But in my experience, they don't really give advice so much. They give a kind of like rote answers that have been given for generations, where you're like, I'm going to start to question that a little bit as a parent. So I always encourage my moms and dads, I have a couple dads too, to advocate for themselves, because you have to do your research. You know, even if it's not my method, if what I'm saying doesn't make sense, then just do your research and find something that resonates with you.
I love that. And I'm a big person about following intuition. And I think parents know best most of the time inside their soul, but obviously giving a lot of a credit to pediatricians. Don't kill me. Don't come after me, guys. I can't take it right now. I haven't slept. I'm not in the mood.
Listen, you will get pre-Al-Anon Anne if you come at me with, hey, May, we're all right now. I'm like, sorry. My kids were sick last week. I'm like, we're good.
Yeah.
But no, and it's not to bash them. It's just that's been my experience. And I think that there's a fine line. Like, yeah, no one wants to give the wrong advice, but there are ways to give parents guidance, because, you know, I have a video on my online program about like how to burp a baby, because there are a lot of parents that are like embarrassed to say that they don't know how to, but I'm like, how would you know if you've never had a child? And don't be embarrassed that you don't know how to burp a baby, or you didn't know that the nipple levels on bottles changed. So just trying to create a resource for parents that's very practical, middle of the road, and working to help parents, you know, navigate this. Sleep is so important. I really couldn't imagine doing this alone. Not that I'm alone. Like, my ex-husband does, we do split custody, which is great. But, you know, when I am alone with my kids, I couldn't imagine having to do this, work, run a business on no sleep.
And no support.
And no support. Yeah, it's just, it's good to work on this. So I'm here trying to get everyone to work on this from birth.
In a nutshell, really quickly, let's cover travel and teething, because I see you talk about both.
Yeah, teething should not disrupt for more than a couple nights. Sometimes the first tooth, you can see like pain going on. But like teething, again, kind of similar with when we have too much daytime sleep, teething gets a bad rap for causing night wakings, because what happens is maybe we don't know the baby's teething and we have a couple of disrupted nights, and then we're like, you must be hungry. And then we feed, and then they start waking for the feed, and then we blame the teeth. One of my oldest friends is a dentist, and I'm like, don't blame the little teeth. I mean, they cause pain. Some parents don't like pain medication, but I always used a pediatrician approved medication when it was really bad. I would use it at night. But one thing with teething is, if you've established, if you follow the full feedings method and you have know that your baby's needs are met during the day, that's what I mean when I say it gives you the confidence to make decisions at night. Because then if you're like, nope, not today, I know that your needs are met and you woke at night, so it must be something else, and I am going to have to help you back to sleep without feeding you. And that's what it gives you the confidence to do, so that like if you have some mild disruptions from teething where it's a couple nights of waking, you aren't adding back a feed in. You are helping them back to sleep, and then that kind of weathers the storm for the teeth to come through. And then after a couple days, you shouldn't have any disruptions. If it's more than that, then you have to obviously go and look at other things. There could be something else going on. But, you know, there's different little tricks, frozen washcloths during the day. You know, you just do your best. Any of these transitions, you do your best to remain status quo with where you are with your baby. You try not to create bad habits that you're going to have to undo later. That's always what I tell parents. So know that, you know, it's going to be a little bit a mild disruption, but I really don't find these things dismantling sleep. Traveling, time zone travel, so easy. Changing time, like when we change the clocks, so easy. I have a whole PDF on it in my online program to change and get baby on the new routine, like in a new time zone. I won't give all the like tips and tricks away, but it's, you know, it's just basically acclimating to the new routine and then managing baby's day to get them to bedtime in the new time zone. That's always a good one to get on the routine. You can get your baby on a new time zone in a couple of days. So it's definitely worth, like if you're traveling into a different time zone, it's definitely worth kind of changing their routine if you want to. You don't have to. And then when you're traveling, you know, you just have to plan ahead. It's everything with parenting. You're going to be planning ahead for the rest of your life with children. I mean, at least I am. So you try to plan your travel around nap time if you can. If you're lucky and traveling with someone, you know, you work together to like maybe someone's in the back of the car keeping the baby awake. Or if you're flying, you're working just to kind of maintain baby's same routine when you're traveling. And, you know, you're just trying your best and that's it. And it might be a completely off day. And then you just, whenever you get to your destination, you work to get back into your routine. That's why the guides are so amazing, for why I think they're so amazing. Because you just then, whenever you can do it anywhere, you can do it at a restaurant. Okay, so what? You have to like stand up for a second and try to get your baby to sleep. I used to do it at the pool with my daughter. And then when you're traveling, you let go of things. You know, optimal wake time trumps, I mean, full feeds are important. When you're traveling, optimal wake time is going to keep you sane, trying to get baby asleep by optimal wake time. And then you let the naps be what they are. Like a 30-minute nap is not bad. It just, for the baby, it's just bad for us because we don't get a break. People are like, well, how long is that okay? And I'm like, it's fantastic. Just get little breaks in. Maybe when you're traveling, you're adding in two extra, you have a bunch of short naps. Okay, enjoy your life. Enjoy your time. Try not to create bad habits. And if baby wakes at night, that could almost be expected. You still maintain your daytime. When you're traveling, like if the daytime routine is off and baby's overly tired or whatever, just work to maintain the full daytime feeds, because then that would give you the confidence to not have to like add feeds at night if you were traveling. And that will prevent any potential night wakings from becoming a thing. you know, just do your best. It's like life, basically. Plan for the best, plan what you want, envision how you would like it to go, you know, and then just try to carry it out and you roll with it and accept what it is and try not to assign too much value to it. Just work through it.
Yeah. And using your intuition along the way seems like a big key of it all.
You have to trust your instincts as a parent. I tell parents this all the time. If you think something's wrong, even if there weren't something wrong, you're never going to do wrong to explore that and trust those instincts. They're there for a reason. Sometimes in, you know, my upbringing, I had exaggerated my instincts where I felt like uncertain about them, but it's kind of coming back to center to like trust that I know, you know, I know what I'm doing as a mom. You know, I birthed this child. I know intuitively often what my babies need. And just trusting that.
Yeah. And I think that's usually the case. It's just hard with so much information out there to tune in for a lot of people. So I love that. Last thing I want to end on, and then I want to talk because I haven't logged in since literally before Teddy was born. I'm about to log in after this and be like, what's new? What do I have to check this out? But single mom hacks.
Yes.
I literally could not imagine at this point in time not having the support I have, because I'm obviously like privileged enough to have that at this point, both with CoCare, Max. I mean, we have a lot of support, but I was raised by an 18-year-old single mom and, you know, four different households and stuff. Let me hear what you've garnered at this point. What are the hacks?
Patience, a lot of patience. I'm working on having grace for myself because I'm very hard on myself as well. I try to plan ahead is my big thing. I am always thinking 10 steps ahead for planning and laying things out as best as I can, like set myself up for success. Like the coffee maker is programmed, the kids' clothes are laid out, the lunch boxes are on the counter. Okay, I put the plates out on the counter in the morning at night. So for breakfast, I don't have to. It's like alleviating kind of work for myself by planning ahead so that I'm not having to like scramble at the last minute. And I know not everyone's a planner, but that's a big thing for me is kind of just planning ahead. But the grace component is big, and I fail at this all the time. But it's just kind of supporting myself in this, that it's never going to be perfect. Letting go of my need to control things. Like, I don't like dirt. So like, if the wall is dirty, it like kind of sets me into an oblivion. So I'm like, I have to let go of these things. Like, I literally have this tank of like my energy. Where do I want to put that? Obviously, it's on the kids, you know, and myself, really making sure I'm taking care of myself too, because if I'm not fed, if I'm not rested, like I sometimes go to bed at 8 o'clock. I know that sounds crazy, but when you are a single parent, no one's coming to my house. My family is deceased. I live in a place with no family because I moved here with my ex-husband, but I don't have any family here. So I'm like, really, if I want help, I'm paying for it. And I have a great team. Like I don't want people to think, you know, I'm not like running this massive business. Like, no help. I have nannies and babysitters that help me. But on the day to day, like if I forget, my daughter had to go to the ER the other night and I'm like, I have two kids here. And unfortunately, due to the circumstances of my divorce, my ex-husband is not permitted in my home. So I'm like, who am I calling? And I'm scrambling. And it's like, just work to try to create a network of people. I have great people in my life here. I feel so fortunate to have been led to them. Complete kismet. Like, it's just people were led to me. I was like, who am I leaving my kid with? How am I going to trust these people? And I have like wonderful people in my life. That's a huge component as well, just finding a support system, even if it isn't family, you know, and planning and just really taking care of myself and letting go. Letting go is a big, which I struggle with a lot, but letting go is a big component because I am doing my best. My mom, my dad, who both struggled with their own addictions, their own childhood traumas, they were doing their best. I'm working really hard. I do a lot of, my boyfriend actually did your inner child workshop. He's like, this is perfect for you.
Wow.
I'm like, don't tell me what I need to do.
You're like, I'm an Aries with Scorpio.
But, you know, it's like doing that work to heal and break the chain,
break the cycle.
And just be whole and complete. So my children aren't having to do inner child work, although they probably will.
They will have to.
Everyone will.
No matter what.
Yes, but just really kind of making sure that like I'm doing my work, that it's not my like little isms that are causing me to like snap on my child or do, you know, be short tempered. I remember I had a friend that was like, you know, just step out of the house. I'm like, and what, leave three kids inside? I mean, they're like, they're going to burn the house down. Yeah. Like, oh, you want me to step outside and scream into a pillow? Because that's not happening when you're a single mom.
Well, I love that. And that I think is inspiring for any parent, to be honest, any parent, I think, is struggling with so many of the things you just talked about. And I'm like, I want four kids. And then I'm like, but let's reconvene after I meet toddler Teddy.
After two, it's kind of the same. You
it
will.
Is, right?
Once you get out of, like, the first year is, like, intense. But you kind of get through that first year and things do start to feel easier, lighter. You get your footing as a parent. You're working, you know, all those things. And you will. You'll have amnesia from the whole thing. Even now, I'm like, I'd have another kid. And I'm like, what did I just say?
Yeah. I love that. Okay, so logging into the program today, what are the things I can check out? And then obviously anybody, but selfishly, that I can check out that would be helpful in this stage? Because I'm sure you have so many new things inside.
Yes. So I think the biggest thing, always the method concepts. Like if you go to the other ingredients section, there's literally 80 short videos and 50 PDFs. You go to method concepts, those are always key. Like we always want to be working on those concepts. Hungry babies don't sleep well. Maintaining 12 hours of daytime is like a huge one. Like the daytime gets so long and then they're like, why is my baby not sleeping 12 hours at night? Because we need to maintain 12 hours of daytime for that to be possible. So those are great. The eat carousel is always fantastic. Just kind of my baby was eating well and suddenly stopped. It just gives little tips and tricks of like, this is what to look for. I mean, where you are with Teddy, I really think it's the guide. Like I would go back to the daytime, that increase in the optimal wake time. Always, always, I say, grab your guide when things go wrong and you're like, everything was going great. It's always go back to your monthly guide, which is under the guide section in the program. And just make sure that all is on point. Because sometimes, like you said, you're like, well, I was doing great. So I wasn't looking at it. That's great. Like, that's what I want parents to do. I literally want parents to subscribe for 3 months and then go into the world and live their beautiful lives. But it's always there to kind of come back to. So that's always the first place would be going back to the age-appropriate monthly guide and kind of realigning with that. Because sometimes longer wake windows will work for a while. And then like cumulatively, all of a sudden it's like, we're just like cumulatively becoming overly tired. And then it can cause sleep disruptions. So sometimes it's like, okay, let's just pull back a little bit. We got a little carried away. Because the truth is, once your baby sleeps all night, you can really kind of do whatever you want until it doesn't work. When it stops working, that's when you want to kind of reevaluate.
And go back to the guide.
Yes. For you with breast milk and nursing, the breastfeeding carousel is fantastic. Cluster feeds, eat, play, eat, sleep. You know, the bottle feeding, that can be helpful as well for that. Naps, I think the naps carousel is great. I just love all of it. Like there's so much stuff in here to just be like, can I extend other naps if one is short? I have quick reference guides of how many naps baby should be taking and are different sleep environments okay? There's just little tidbits in here. I did make this searchable recently. I'm still perfecting how that search engine is working to make sure parents are getting their questions answered. Like when they're like short naps, is it eliciting the response that they want? But yeah, I mean, I think there's so much solids. There is. So if you will look to the sweet potato example, why milk should be offered first. It's one of my favorite PDFs that I created. Yeah. And then there's a lot of stuff in the other carousel that's, you know, for parents of multiples.
I swear I'm going to expand into probably doing twins at some point, but whew, it sounds psychotic. And I have so much respect for all of the twin parents out there.
Well, I used to think about whenever I had a difficult day, just to kind of keep like a positive perspective, because a lot of this is too, like is the perspective, is keep the faith, you know, that it's possible, that it works, that you're on the right path. All those things are relevant to baby sleep. I used to go to sleep before my daughter slept through the night and give thanks that she was sleeping through the night. Like it manifests that. Like I would be like, thank you for sleeping all night. I just kept that belief system in place. And that's a lot of parenthood, is that perspective and just keeping a positive mind frame, which the sleep does help with. When I was not sleeping, I couldn't. It was very difficult for me to stay in that space of intention and just being thoughtful and methodical and just really kind of seeing my life and sticking with anything that I kind of set out to do. It was difficult without the sleep. So that's further why it's so important to work on this from birth.
And last but not least, for all the people who have been listening in brand new, how is it best to navigate your brand?
I think Instagram is a really good place to start. I put a lot of free content out there. I do talk about a lot of the same things. I try to present it in different ways for my like long-term parents. Instagram is kind of a great barometer on like, do you align with me and my thought process? But also my website, you know, there's a ton of information, fullfeedings.com. The infant program is just fullfeedings.com/infant. I do have a new toddler program as well to kind of help parents keep the sleep through the toddler years. But I'm also super accessible. So I answer all my DMs myself. And then I also answer all of my emails myself. So I usually have a 24-hour response time or less.
Watch out after this podcast episode.
I know, girl. They're going to be like, hit me up. I'm like, I got to get an employee. I'm working on hiring someone, but I just, you know, again, like I said, you don't want to compromise the brand. And I know I'll find the right person. I haven't really put it out there to the universe quite yet. So I'm just kind of piecing it together of like what I kind of want that to look like a little bit. And I know I'll find the right person to build and just enrich my brand. But I want it to remain the same. I want parents to feel supported and loved. And I hop on, I mean, watch, everyone's gonna be like, I want a free call. But like, if I have parents who are really struggling, even at the $9.99 price point, I'll be like, let's hop on a call. Like, you know, I really am passionate about this. And it's not about the money to me, although I do want to make a living doing it. But I'm very passionate about what I do. So I'm super accessible. Just ask me if you have questions, you know, fears. Like a lot of parents are nervous to start sleep training. I'm always willing to kind of quell those fears because it's such a gentle, beautiful process when you start from birth. And then you can kind of stop. Like you're at a point where you're like, I still want to have this nursing session to kind of align with what my desires are for my child to nurse. And this is what's best for us. And when you're not wanting to do that anymore, then you can proceed and get a full 12 hours of sleep at night when you're ready. But you know, it's just a beautiful method that helps to meet parents where they are and support them on their, you know, in getting their children to sleep better.
Wonderful. Well, I love it. I feel like we have to have another conversation at some point. I'm sure the next time I have a real problem, we can have another another
absolutely
podcast episode.
I would love to.
So wonderful. So grateful for your time.
I appreciate you wanting to have this conversation with me and seeing the good in my brand and what I'm doing.
Thank you. It's been so tremendously helpful. And again, like a very easy to implement. You leave so much freedom and space for parents to make the choices that are right for them of how to get their child down, how to sleep them, all of that. It's just really, really targeted at being able to get sleep early on and consistently.
Thank you so much. This was such a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Anne. So fun. Until next time.
Yes.
Thank you so much for tuning into the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, we did. And in case you're not totally ready to join the pathway yet, I wanted to share a few of our free offerings that I'll often suggest to people as a little bit of a blueprint to get them started on their manifestation journey. The first place I like to direct people completely for free is the Motivation. You can see it linked below or on our homepage as our testimony library. And it's categorized by different subjects, whether you're calling in career, money, love, wellness, and much more. When you're reading about a member's experience of what they manifested, you're actually seeing to believe and showing your subconscious that that very thing is possible for you. The second place I like to direct people is to the free clarity exercise, which is also linked below. In it, you get to try our own unique hypnosis process, learn about the science, and some journaling prompts. And the best part about this, you'll get a tiny taste of what it's like to go into your hypnotic state, bring your subconscious forward, and create new neural pathways while receiving clarity. And the third thing, if you haven't listened to it on this podcast yet, please go back to the episode titled Manifestation 101, where you'll learn the basics of neural manifestation to truly understand this process. So go ahead and check out those free resources, the Motivation, the free clarity exercise, and the episode Manifestation 101, all linked below. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.